So anyway, this challenge thing of David and Goliath, that as we had said, the Philistines were very much kind of Greek, Crete, that whole kind of area. And as you realize, we're not that far distance from like the Trojan War, the Iliad, all of that things. So there was some good articles, some not so good articles, but I did find one that kind of gave me really good quick info that I was looking for, where we does kind of a comparison between Goliath and David and things from the Iliad. So, first of all, we're given this description, a helmet of bronze, a coat of mail that weighed about 125 pounds. It was bronze. He had bronze, the Greeks call those greaves, a javelin of bronze slung over his shoulder, and then also a spear that was pretty hefty and was made of iron and had this high weight. So that's kind of the description that's given of Goliath, and again, that challenge is made. Here's actually some, from an archaeological dig, kind of some scale armor of the time period. Here are those graves, again, that we associate more with the Greeks, that it wasn't so much common in the region of Canaan. The scale armor, though, was pretty common. Was known. And then at least the metal helmet, we really associate the Assyrians. Here is a picture drawn kind of showing a soldier in grave, and of course he's got the arrow. He has that sort of Ahab effect to him. They seem to like to show guys in armor getting shot with arrows on chariots. And they're not Ahab. They're other folks. So, but anyway, the armor was fairly common. Okay, this is, if you go back to our lesson kind of on the Philistine, Samson, and David, we have here around 1020 BC, sometime around there, we have David and Goliath going at it. Well, if you look at when the Trojan War most likely happened, that's between 2050 and 1200 BC. So 150 to 200 years before David and Goliath were going at it, all these folks from the Iliad, the Trojan War, were going at it. So it had been long enough that these stories would be around and sort of, again, A, that's how the Greeks like to fight, and B, you've got this really big epic. I don't know if any of y'all dressed up as your favorite movie hero or anything like that when you were kids. I did. My poor mom had to sew me a Batman outfit, or well, a cape. That's what was important. But anyway, so, you know, we kind of will tend to recreate these major, it has an impact on us. So it really is not too surprising to see, you know, Goliath making comments that he's making, but that kind of gives you a time frame there. And so here's kind of some of the comparisons. Some of them, it's, you know, sometimes when you get into these comparisons, they like think it's like it's overload. So I picked really some of the good ones. But, you know, Samuel, choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. And then the Iliad, you have several of these scenes of the major characters, you know, coming out, the champions doing the fight. Here, you know, a bronze armor with legs, javelin of bronze on this thing, and then the spear shaft. Well, Achilles had greaves, or those leg things. Of course, he really needed those. Again, the Trojan Achaean warriors wearing the leg cover. They also would like, they would have two weapons. They would have a javelin, they would have a spear, and they really talked about how heavy they were, the size of their spear, huge. They were into huge spears. And then Odysseus carried a helmet, shield, and two spears. So Odysseus was very much her into that. Goliath hurls, you know, I'll give your flesh to the birds of the sky, the beast of the field. David also says, I'll give the carcass of the Philistine camp to the birds of the sky and the beast. So this really, because, and then also the Greeks did that. And actually, I think that was just sort of the way you described, because we go all the way down to like Ahab, Jezebel, and it's still, you know, those that die out in the fields, the birds going to have, the ones that die in the city, the dogs are going to eat. So that's a fairly kind of, put down or saying, hey, this is going to be your fate. But again, very kind of a similarity that's given there. So, and again, I think it helps if you kind of put in the time frame here. Now, remember, of course, I think probably the oral things of Iliad had already been set down, but it would still be another 300 years before someone decided to write it down, or at least the oldest record that we have. So, anyway, and there's kind of the source. So, we're lesson six. We're Solomon the Builder, okay? And so we'll hit a little bit of David, realize there's a little effect of David and all of that. But when we think of Solomon, we think of Solomon as the builder. That, it's Solomon building. I mean, David did a good bit of building, but again, really associate Solomon. We're going to have Hezekiah, who does a lot of building. And then when we, look at, life of Jesus, things that Jesus was used or would see as he was going about a preaching of the building of Herod. I mean, Herod was, I think, at a level that probably Solomon was. So hopefully we get through our class, that you'll have a better feel for the Bible timeline of places, of people. We've been jumbling around. Has anybody gotten a better feel of people, places, and time? Okay, I got at least one shake. Thank you, Carrie. Thank you. At least one person has helped me meet that objective. What happens so often as we're showing these kind of pictures and these sort of things is that people will say, man, it just reminds me we really are talking about real people, real places, real events when we look at these things. So that's, I think, really important. And then that build your faith. I think, Sewell's hit it and some others, but, really it's as commented that it's just you look at these overwhelming items and artifacts, and it really, the people who say, oh, no, this is all made up, all of that, they just sort of, sounding brass wire. I mean, they're just noise. That when we kind of look at all of this, it's just pretty overwhelming, again, that we're talking real places, real time. This is all real, so it strengthens our faith. All right, so we're lesson six. We're working our way through. I got you 7 and 8. I'd hoped to get you 9, but I failed. So lesson 9, we finish up the Old Testament and our journeys, and then we'll go to the days of, we'll spend 3 in the New Testament, then 1 kind of big review. This Sunday at 5, the archaeology of Jerusalem, we'll hit Old Testament, New Testament, but we'll just focus on the city of Jerusalem. Tonight's lesson, United Kingdom, is where we're at. We're talking about Solomon. We'll hit a little bit, we'll veer a little to Rehoboam, but really we're talking about Solomon. So we're the United Kingdom. We are in Iron Age. This is all Iron Age, folks. There is no bronze around, okay? Well, actually, bronze is still around and being used, but this is Iron Age 2. This is really kind of the United Kingdom period. We kind of put it to an end with the invasion of Shishak in 925. He really just wreaks a lot of havoc, so the people digging in the ground know really when when Shishak came around. So the big thing, okay, we'll see what happens here. The big thing is that, again, David was a man of war. He couldn't build the temple. Solomon, we sort of say, with that peace, everything is sort of established. So what you've got is that this is pretty much, if you look at Deuteronomy, what was the land of promise, what was going to be laid out, and the days of Solomon were all there. He either controls or has vassals or treaties, kind of going the whole way there. Let's see what happens here. I hadn't realized. Okay, there. So we read about Solomon, and we have his ships that he sent out from the port here, and I don't have any of those pictures, but there's some evidence of that. But he traded. He would say he would import from Egypt a chariot and a horse, and he would trade it up here to these guys here. So he was the middleman. So he got to kind of, I pay this, I'm going to charge you this. And so that he was doing this trading. Now, one thing we kind of asked is, we read the Bible and just Solomon, this amazing kingdom, right? Tremendous amount of wealth. Why then? We have Solomon, so great, kingdom so great. Why do we not have any inscriptions that say anything about Solomon?
Is it because the focus was on God?
It could be some. There is some that really doing the stelas, the things like that. Later we have a lot more of those. So, it could be that one reason that we don't have those is that wasn't the thing you did then, unless you're an Egyptian. The Egyptians always said great things about themselves. But
well, obviously you could say we just haven't found it yet, but...
Yeah, that is another...
That's too easy.
Yeah.
But it also, the next thing that happens after Solomon dies is that the northern part of the kingdom splits off, and part of establishing your dynasty is to get rid of any symbols or writings about the previous dynasty, so... That's half the country that no longer has a record of Solomon.
And if you really look area, it's even more than that.
Right.
Cherry, you had a thought?
I was going to say pretty much the same thing. He was primarily, if you think of his headquarters as being in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was rather violently destroyed twice after he came along. Mm-hmm. And it's been inhabited most of that time, so it would be very difficult to dig down and find those remains.
Yeah. But, it's just like the Assyrians and the Egyptians. We just don't find them. And, just realize that. We go to Assyria, and we've found so many incredible things. But there's just no real mention of Solomon. You go down to Egypt. There's no, at least, identification to say, yep, Solomon. Now, I think with time, we probably will find something. Because in the 80s, they said there was no David. And look how much we've found since the 80s.
What you find about those, it is often some king that has conquered them.
Yes.
And it's on, whereas during Solomon's time, nobody was conquering them.
That's correct. Very good point. That is. They usually were bragging about conquering somebody. Yes?
Wasn't a lot of what Solomon had stolen because it was valuable?
And actually, there's an interesting exercise. If you look at all the stuff that Shishak built and what he gave, you can get an estimate of maybe what Solomon's wealth was.
So maybe it got stolen more than usual because it was, I don't know, this is just a theory, like it was made into, there's gold shields. Maybe it was made into valuable...
Right. Oh, yeah. Man, I would have, And that was when I was teaching the middle schoolers. There are gold shields. King Tut had gold shields. Stuff you get a feel for that, yeah.
For that matter, a lot of the valuables from the temple and the king's palace were given as tribute to try to get kings to go away, and he was alone.
Right.
After Solomon's death.
But, you know, again, there is a school of archaeologists who argue if I don't find it, well, actually, they have zero, zilch belief in the Bible. So if they don't find it on an inscription, really of the Assyrians, because they don't hang out with the Egyptians, they say it doesn't exist. It's kind of, if you go through their exercise of logic, you see where they reach the conclusion. You also see their conclusion is very wrong compared to the Bible text. But I think, you know, one key thing is there wasn't conquest. In other words, you know, they weren't conquering Solomon. And I think the other thing is Solomon's kingdom wasn't so much based on conquest, was it? It was based on wealth, on trade. So I think those are a couple of reasons that we maybe haven't found Solomon was here or something like that. And then also give it time, because again, in the 80s, they were giving everybody grief because they hadn't found anything about David, House of David, and now we have several finds. And actually, as we look here, I think we'll see some pretty strong evidence of Solomon as a builder. This one I really liked. I didn't put all the other stuff, but this gives you a feel. Solomon controlled the roads. If you were going north, if you were going south, you were going through Solomon's kingdom. And so that is what made him such a powerful trader. And just a tremendous amount of gold was coming in to the kingdom. Oh, there, 660 talents a year. I had figured at one point how much that was, but that's a lot of gold. Talent is an unweighty thing. So again, all this trade is coming in and coming through Solomon. So he was a great trader rather than conquering lots of areas. So preparation to build the temple, we kind of, y'all read through some of that. So what do you expect to find there if we're digging in the ground for the temple? Okay. Cherry's not willing to make any kind of comment. Huh?
Bones.
Okay, that's a good one, because like we look at the altar at Mount Abel, the thing that we find is a tremendous amount of bones, and none of them are pig bones. Mm-hmm. So, okay, expectation of finding bones.
Stones.
Oh, yeah, there are a lot of stones. So. Okay, so yeah, we're going to find hopefully some remains. Yes? Ooh, I forgot to put those pictures in. I doubt... Well, we maybe, you never know. You know, all of that area is controlled by Muslims now, but they have been, there were some pictures taken and stuff, and there were some pretty old cedar, although very well could have come, though, from the time of when the Dome of the Rock was built and all, but at least some of those pictures, they made the guess that maybe... Some of it could have gone back. I mean, cedar doesn't rot as bad, so you have a better shot at that. But, yes?
I think it's interesting to note that a lot of the wood for the temple was from the cedars.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, it's a beautiful tree. There's some pictures. I didn't include that in this particular slide deck, but it was a beautiful tree. The cedars of Lebanon. But yeah, they came down, and what we do have is we do have the Assyrians who loved, you know, putting things on walls, reliefs. We have a picture from the Assyrians' relief of the folks from Lebanon bringing down, it would be Phoenicia then, bringing cedar down. And so just as Hiram says, hey, my servants are going to bring it down to the sea, I'm going to make rafts and direct it towards you. So, I mean, that's what it reads. And then you go over to Assyria, and the Assyrians say, hey, when these guys are carrying trees, they'll do rafts, they'll put them on boats, but they will bring them by sea. So to me, that's just pretty incredible that here you have this description given in Kings, and then we go over a couple hundred years later, and there they are carrying that wood. And then here is an artist sort of recreating that and more. For some reason, people have problems with this. They're not able to fully capture us today. We're just not into 8th century B.C. Rock reliefs. So this is more what our modern eyes can get our head around. So again, they would have been from the mountains of Lebanon, Sidon. They would have been brought down here to Joppa. So here's kind of the rivers there, north of Tyre. So they would have brought that wood by river out here to the Mediterranean and then brought it into Joppa. And for Joppa, they would have brought it on to Jerusalem. So at least, you know, we have very good feel for the description that's given is very accurate to how wood was transported. So building the temple, we kind of gotten on what, a little bit ahead. I guess that was preparation. So this is kind of, you know, building. We're looking bones, some stones, some things like that. And that's pretty good, right? Because that temple was destroyed, right? By Nebuchadnezzar, Babylonians. So it was destroyed. Okay, this is where I threw these in, is that if we kind of looking around that time period, first of all, again, was this thing, well, David wasn't there. There wasn't a palace. So back in 2007, some of these large walls, these stones were uncovered, and the carbon dating, the fill stuff, seemed to point to David's royal castle. There's kind of just another look. And again, to us, I mean, oh, you know, we have enough problems with Assyrian stone reliefs, right? I mean, to the untrained archaeologist eye, we're pretty sad shape trying to interpret what we're seeing there. But there is a general kind of quote amongst archaeologists, three stones in a line is a wall. So we definitely have walls there. And this, though, is, I think, kind of gives us a better feel for at least any of y'all who have ever worried about or thought about Jerusalem, especially David's Jerusalem. There's this Melo, or Milo, that's mentioned a lot. And we're not sure absolutely what it is, but most folks think it's this step structure. So that they built this, and it goes back into even the Jebusite days, which makes it kind of hard to do all this dating. But it sort of, again, formed, gave strength to this stone wall palace that we associate with David. And so here, an artist has been kind enough to show us, but it talks about, again, it needs repairs. So it talks about Solomon repairing. And so this is all those stones that we were looking at and scratching our head about that at least folks who know a little more are kind of saying, well, this is what we think it is that it looked like. So y'all can identify with that, right, much more than...
The other thing that's cool about that site is that it's...
There, you can still see those.
Oh, the mine. Oh, yeah.
That, if you look back at the other, down there.
Yeah.
A portion of that pile of stone.
Yes.
It's just right there. You can see it.
Yeah. And then this is, this right here is that pile of stones that we can see. That's what it really looks like. Mason?
I was just going to say, really almost directly underneath this, is a stone cistern that dates back to the time of Abraham, basically.
Uh-huh.
So it just demonstrates like how on top of everything else is in Jerusalem, which is part of the difficulty you're talking about of finding Solomon, because everything's been built over 50 times since.
And they're still living there.
Yeah, exactly.
it's kind of rock, so you know they kind of clear away stuff. It's not like dirt building up so much. Not shown here is actually you get to the days of Hezekiah, and there are houses all along here, just to add confusion to everything. So here an artist, again, is kind of helping us, is, you know, Jerusalem in the days of David was down further on the hill. And then Mount Moriah, this is where stops the angel, was killing everyone and things like that. So there is sort of David's day, and then there's Solomon's day. So the temple. So Solomon had that whole nice clear area to do the building. So he built his house up here next to the temple there. And then as we see here, is Herod, Hasmoneans, everybody said, well, Solomon's square isn't good enough. We're going to make it bigger, which really makes things confusing. So there's a drawing again, kind of giving you a feel for what Solomon's place might have looked like. So here's the Temple Mount, days of the divided kingdom, days of right before the Hasmoneans. Hasmoneans in control, so they make the first edition, and then Solomon really makes additions. Although what's interesting is Josephus still considers this area as the temple area, that all that other stuff that Solomon, that Herod built, he didn't. And then that's what it looks like today. So you have kind of that mount. So
where's that? Is that the is that where the Wailing Wall is?
Yes, right here is the Wailing Wall. Yeah. The Wailing Wall is here. Then you actually go underground, and at the point that is kind of directly straight to where the temple would have been is where Jews will come, and they will also, they'll do real wailing. It was really, when we did our tour through there, there was a couple of Jewish ladies, and they were really doing kind of a wailing cry, which I hadn't really heard, but that was, anyway. That's Sunday afternoon. Sunday afternoon we'll do the tour along the Western Wall.
The thing that I was surprised by when we were there was that, I know Herod expanded the temple platform a lot, but now the Temple Mount is basically right across the street from the City of David. Some of those maps make it look like it's like half a mile away. It's not. It's all like jammed right on top of each other.
Yeah.
It's all really close together. I mean, David would have been able to see Aruna's house and threshing floor from his
his
roof. You know.
Yes. I mean that. I don't. That doesn't have that scale on there. But yeah, that's really close. And actually, a lot of people had figured his palace had been wiped out and covered up by Herod. And it almost is. I mean, it's right.
You look at it on that, it's literally across the street.
Street, yeah. You're there. Because, I mean, you can see a lot more areas being covered. So it's right there. So here, again, is the original. And then this is all that has been added there. There is kind of, the folks that kind of go through this, is that if you're actually kind of, hey, looking for at least where Solomon had that wall built, it's not the temple, but where the Western Wall is, it's actually these steps. At the bottom of these steps going up there. And I believe, Sewell, when y'all went, that you and Paul found that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's right there, jumped right on top of Solomon's wall.
We were watching it, did what Jesus did. We got lost in the temple.
But anyway, on my trip, we didn't go up there. I was a little disappointed, but we were pretty busy anyway. And here's Joy. So, again, this part of this retaining wall of Solomon is still there. For those, there's a lot of people that worry about this, but really, that Dome of the Rock, according to people I at least trust pretty much, was where the Ark of the Covenant was placed. And there's a whole discussion, and again, come Sunday afternoon, and we'll hit on some of that. So there is Solomon's Temple of Drawing, the Bronze Sea, where they would do sacrifices, where they had another water, our artist rendition going at it again, giving us who are handicapped in being able to really imagine a pretty good view. He does a pretty good job. Part of the descriptions and stuff in there where you can get kind of confusing is that these chambers for storage and taking care of the sanctuary was built around the sanctuary. Okay, so if you look and you're kind of getting confused, what in the world are these things? That there was this area here, and they had a process where they could lower somebody, they had a device to lower where a person could do work on the walls of the Holy of Holies, but not see the actual Holy of Holies. This whole surface of area around was meant for that kind of storage, and then also just maintaining the interior. Another thing that has survived the first temple is a hippo tooth. This is the tooth of a hippopotamus that has been carved into a little pomegranate. And so you look at this and you think these things are pretty big, but this is a tooth of a hippopotamus. It's pretty small. It was some kind of ornament from Solomon's temple. There are some who say it's a forgery, but from the articles I've read, I think it's real. And so, you know, we've got walls from Solomon's temple, just like we sort of have the Temple Mount, but we don't have the temple from Herod's from Jesus' day. But that's it. That's all they have found from the temple. Builds his house. It's always kind of was interesting, wasn't it? What did y'all think of the fact that it took Solomon longer to build his house than to build the house of the Lord? There was kind of several articles kind of go on to that. I will say this for Solomon. David gave him a head start, right, on the temple. So there's other reasons to give Solomon a hard time, but I would say maybe the reason he was able to build the temple faster was because David had given him a head start on getting the materials there.
Well, had more laborers.
Yes. Yes, would have had more laborers.
I was going to say, do you think because God's temple didn't have any cutting, not using any kind of tools on it, and his had cutting?
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. That would also take more time.
To cut all that stuff out.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts? These are good thoughts. All right. So Solomon's house, again, cedar. Another drawing here, and this is kind of based on the digging and stuff. And, you know, one thing that's kind of interesting is that as a teenager and stuff, as I was getting hooked on all of this stuff, they hadn't found this Gihon spring. So here's like the central spring. And the archaeologists were, you know, you look at the drawings and stuff, and they don't show any of these towers and stuff. And then, you know, you're thinking, well, there's no more to find that's been excavated. Kenyon, you know, the supposed gold standard of archaeology, had dug there, right in that area, and hadn't found it. But they went back and dug, and lo and behold, there's this whole tower system there protecting this crucial spring, which makes sense that it would be there. There, kind of, again, a drawing kind of showing, like I say, most older drawings will not show this at all. And, you know, if you're always kind of interesting to, you know, see where people are basing their drawings, it's always an interesting exercise to see how they handle the structures and stuff that have been found around there. So there, again, showing David, the temple area where the temple would be, David's palace. Sunday night, come Sunday night, and you'll get a feel for just how close his palace would be to where the Temple Mount is today. So, here you've got it. So, this is the oval, this is the city. So, and again, David's, there's the step stone, so right there is where David's palace would be. And then right there, this was all built up when the city was Muslim back, 700-800 AD. Of course, the Temple Mount. So it's just as Mason described, across the street.
You can see the street.
You can see the street. Right there is the street. Right there. So here is kind of that rendition. The house, the force of Lebanon, the pillars in the place so much that it looks like you're walking into a forest for the rooms. And what's also interesting, at least here, the artist has shown three sets of pillars, but you look at the administrative buildings and some things like that in some of the other cities, and it's like they're not they're stone pillars. But they'll do this kind of triple pillar. So anyway, so it's kind of Solomon's house and that. But, you know, this is a rendition. They hadn't really found everything there. Again, kind of that same drawing. Now, some things that they have dug up is that, this is Megiddo. And so this is the palace of Solomon at Megiddo. But, you know, you get one design, you're going to kind of stick with it, right? So, but it has these, rather than the Ionic column heads or Doric or all of those, it's this style here where it's kind of the stone and carved. And for those who are going to LaGrange on Saturday, you'll see a reproduction of that. We'll go through it. We'll spend time going through the all the different column designs. All right, so back in 2009, excavation's going on, and the claim was made, I have found Solomon's palace. So everybody immediately said, no, you haven't, no, you haven't. But, I think you have reasonable proof, and it is kind of where you expect it to be. But really, this is not the palace per se. This is like the gateway into it. But here are some of the stones. So again, when you see stones like that, you know, we spent all that time talking about that fort that's kind of David's time into Solomon's time and say, you don't build a fort like this without a central government. It takes a government project to do this. You look at the size of those stones and things like that, that takes a lot of manpower. And therefore, you need to be organized to feed them, to get them there.
They're neatly arranged, too.
Yes. And this is kind of, stones have had a hard wear, but it's even, you can really tell a Herodian because they have, around the edge trimmed. So here they talk about, that they kind of did a little bit of trimming there. Not up to the standards of Herod, which is amazing, but still pretty impressive. Here's the tower, so the gate tower, this area here, this is part of that. Again, preserved up to 15 feet there. And so here is the artist's rendition of, you look at all of this, the large tower, that is an artist, which again, we're not archaeologists, so we look at that and we have a little trouble. But we look at that and say, oh, yeah, I see it now. Now, the other thing that was interesting is they found these huge pots. They didn't say necessarily they were Solomon's time, but huge in this royal structure. The pots were the size of a person, storage coming in. And then you start just reading about all the stuff that Solomon had coming in, right? Just gives you kind of a, whoa, okay, just imagine all of that coming into pots like that. And then kind of as they were doing this excavation, they found this lamp. And lamps are like, they're how you check time. Because just as we were looking at a watch from the turn of the 19-aught to like 2000, 1950s, whatever, you can tell watches, right? Fitbits, I can tell you exactly what time this would have been. So lamps were the same way. So these are the kind of lamps from Solomon's day, from the United Kingdom period. All right. The other thing is, this has recently been in the news. This isn't Solomon. This is Rehoboam. And if you look at the cities that Solomon did, he did not really do a lot of fortification along the Egyptian border, right? He was married to an Egyptian princess, so why, or an Egyptian daughter of a pharaoh, so I didn't need to have forts. Well, Shishak comes up, wreaks havoc. So you look at the cities, the places where Rehoboam does his fortification, it's along that Egyptian border. And so actually Lachish was not fortified by Solomon, but was fortified by Rehoboam. So they were digging through this wall and coming to this wall. So they found the floor. They did carbon dating, and they said, yeah, this is, you know, we're right in that 920 time period. They kept digging. They hit the wall, okay? And so they say this wall is associated with this floor, so that this fortification would have been done in the 10th century by Rehoboam. So that's a Rehoboam wall. And that is like, was announced in the last month or two. So stuff's coming out all the time. It really has to work hard to keep up for y'all. Here you go, Solomon's wall there. Okay, another thing, again in this whole argument that Solomon exists, that David exists, Edom is a critical thing in this whole sort of discussion. Because people said Edom didn't exist in the days of Moses and didn't exist in the days of David and was much later. Well, they started again doing surveying and stuff, and you come to this mine here, copper mine. And this here is where they would do the smelting. It was called Slave's Hill. And again, wood and stuff, they were able to do carbon dating. And it comes in the 11th century, 9th century. So that's kind of, days of Judges, Saul, David, Solomon, on into later. And also, these are the guys that found the camels that said, hey, you know, camels, you know, didn't come into Israel until this, because, well, they didn't come into these mines. But anyway. So here, this gatehouse complex, and it was, most of the site was destroyed in 925 when Shishak came. So they have a good day for an ending. So again, in the days of Solomon, in the time of David, there was a copper mine here. Okay? So suddenly, yes, the Edomites were a kingdom. They were subjugated by David, and they had to buy copper. So it was kind of, again, when these guys started digging here, they had no plans, no thought that they would get into this whole squabble. Looking at fortifications, I mean, this is how you can tell building's going on. This is Saul's fortification, okay? Pretty simple. We spent time talking about David's fortification, right, where Goliath battle went right in there. And then here are the cities that were fortified by Saul. I'm Solomon. So you got Gezer, you got Megiddo, Arad. You know, there's a little bit of that stuff down in the south, but not as much as he did. So we go there, and we go, first of all, we found horse stables, right? Solomon's in the horse business. So you find a lot of horse stables that are found there. And then there's these gates. So these three locations, all fortified by Solomon, significant gates showing there, and they're kind of give you a feel. There is that sixth chamber. So there's kind of the wall there. So that is over 6 feet wide there. I think we were saying we were going to kind of get a feel for there. So there's the Hazor Gate. You're kind of going through there. Pretty major thing. The gate at Megiddo. Hazor Gezer. So, again, the problem when they dug this, when the original guy was digging this, he read Solomon fortified these gates, or fortified these cities. All of these cities that Solomon was supposed to fortify he found these six chamber gates. So he said, aha, these are Solomon's gates. He did not do carbon 14 dating. So the guys come back after and say, oh, no, 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 no. Can't be. And, you know, they say, oh, well, yeah, here, here. Oh, I don't believe the Bible. Show me your carbon 14 dating. Well, the original guy, Bible spade kind of guy, not overly Bible, but again, you read, fortified, six gates, and you find this. And so this opens up the whole thing. So this is a case where it would have been better to have been a little more aggressive in proving things. So those are your gates, and kind of, anyway, there's a good picture. The gays are gay, so they're kind of going through that.